I mean, it wasn't a bad theme song for WrestleMania. It's one of the better ones recently. Some of the pay-per-view theme songs for the wrestling lately have just been woof, yuck.
Yeah, I thought it was great. Like, it's an actual, like, it's an artist everyone knows. It was catchy. It was
The thing. When it's the show of shows, the showcase of the immortals, and it's got to have a little something.
Welcome everyone to the Final Play podcast. This one we're doing, I don't think we have done a wrestling before, have we?
This would be the first one that we've done on the WWE.
And I think our love affair of wrestling.
Well, I guess we could say there's a little bit of knowledge when it comes to past and present professional wrestling would exceed most people's knowledge. So,
We go on then, because I don't think I've ever actually asked you this, what or who got you into wrestling?
Well, obviously back in the day, you used to be able to get the old wrestling videos, at Civic Video. I think it was the old Plains video back there at home in Bowen. And me and Steph, shout out to Noss. We'd go down there and we'd hire out the videos and we'd watch the old wrestling, like the old Survivor Series, the old SummerSlams, the old WrestleManias that were all on VHS video, and we'd sort of watch them and we'd sort of, you know, document them. We'd run the covers of it through his fax machine at his place, and we'd sort of, you know, sort of do a little scrapbook. He had a scrapbook at his place, and we'd have all the results and everything written in it. So we were sort of into it then, and that would have been when we were like 10 or 11. And sort of, you know, I guess you did that for a little while, and then once high school come around, you sort of got different priorities, and wrestling just wasn't one of them. And then one night, whilst drinking, shall we say, alcoholic beverages, one Saturday night in 1998 at the end of the year, and the Deadly Games was on Channel 10, and that was the Survivor Series of, I'm pretty sure it was 1998, and it was the Rock and Mankind was having. Yeah, just a crazy feud, man. You just feel that the genuine animosity towards each other. That they told a really good story, and it was just on in the middle of the night, and we ended up turning it on and started watching that, and it's just like wow, and just got back into wrestling as an 18-year-old, and just haven't really looked back.
Yeah, I think mine was sort of a similar story. I mean, it was the videos. It was probably Hulk Hogan, because I just think I think he is the guy that everyone sort of knew back then, and sort of, I guess he brought it into the mainstream for everybody. But yeah, priorities took over, and then it was about the same time that I quit match. And then I went.
That's what I mean. And once you sort of start having that sort of deep dive into those years that you missed out on, for me, you didn't really miss out on a whole lot, you know, probably between say 1993 and 1997. But then, that start of the Attitude Era, obviously, you know, Austin winning the King of the Ring, starting that whole sort of movement there, you started to get that new breed of wrestlers start to come in. You know, The Rock had been around for a little while now. Obviously, he wasn't called The Rock. He was Rocky Maivia. And they started to sort of see the potential of those guys. Seeing what we saw in the deadly games. Mm. I fell in love with Mankind and Mick Foley and just everything about the three personas of him, so to speak. And yeah, he just absolutely just pretty much rocketed to the top of my of my favorite wrestlers until 1999 until a certain Y2J came along and that sort of not so much superseded it, but I guess he sort of took over as the excitement machine that he still is now, man. He's still drawing a crowd.
Yeah. Well Reese, so to speak. He's drawing fans in. That's probably the best way to put
that's
it.
That's right.
If you had to name, I've always heard people do this, but if you had like a Mount Rushmore of four wrestlers, who would you throw there?
I did have this. I was talking about this with somebody that, like, obviously, I think the two. For me, I think it's the two that are fairly easy to go up there, and that's Hogan and Ric Flair. I think they're a given, and I'd sort of have to. This will probably be a little bit controversial, but I think just through pure longevity, it has to be Triple H and The Undertaker. I think that's my Mount Rushmore.
I'd say Hogan, Flair. I mean, that's pretty easy.
I think that goes without saying, really.
I agree with Undertaker and longevity, but I'm not even going to say who my favorite is, but I think just Stone Cold just brought it.
You've still got to toss it up. Stone Cold made massive impacts in professional wrestling, even though he sort of, he was on top for a little while, and then he sort of left WWE a little bit disgruntled and he's been back and everybody always sort of gravitates to him. But, with Triple H being, what is he 15? He's one behind Ric Flair.
Yeah.
So he's, the 15-time champ. Some of the matches that he puts on and the way that he sort of tells a story is definitely worth putting up there. I can't see sort of anybody of this current crop sort of being anywhere near any of those, even though John Cena is tied Ric Flair, hasn't he? He's got 16 no, world championships, or is he still got 15?
He's still 15.
Thank God for that.
So, but you'd have, I mean, again, that's another guy. I wouldn't say he'd be there out of anyone that I would pick, but. But his longevity alone, he still can pump out pretty good main event matches.
I guess we'll get into the Firefly Funhouse match a little bit later in this. That was it was the second to last match on night two.
Yeah.
So we'll sort of get into my opinions on that. They're not very high.
Well, we'll fast forward then. So we're talking about WrestleMania 36. That was, I would say, due to the coronavirus, they end up for the first time ever, they end up doing two nights of WrestleMania.
The two separate nights, yeah. They've had it at. I'm pretty sure WrestleMania 2 was at three different. Was it three different arenas?
Yeah,
and they had three different main events. The only one that's sort of coming to mind as a main event was Hogan and King Kong Bundy in a cage match. And that's without sort of having the ability to look that up at the moment. But it was in three different places. But I'm pretty sure this is the first time that they've done it in front of, like a lot of things, they've done it in front of nobody.
The other two were Mr. T and Rowdy Piper.
That was a boxing match, wasn't it?
That was a boxing match. And then the other one was a battle royale. But I think the card was...
Which Andre the Giant most likely would have won, or Big John Studd or somebody like that?
No, it was Andre the Giant won that one.
Yeah.
But the poster card was basically set as the main event was Hulk Hogan, King Kong Bundy.
King Kong Bundy.
Yeah,
which going by WrestleMania main events, that's pretty ordinary.
Well, this is true.
Man.
Oh well, that's what drew people back then.
No, that's right. Well, yeah, it didn't have to be. It just had to be Hulk Hogan. Like, that's all.
Well, that's it.
That's all it had to be. It was Hogan. And anybody. There's going to be eyeballs. There's going to be eyeballs on it.
Due to the coronavirus, they did end up doing this over two nights. And
taped over two nights.
Taped over two nights. I think that's smart. And I'll say why probably during some of the matches, because we can sort of, I guess, pinpoint why. But I don't mind it. I mean, obviously you can do that when you have no crowd. Obviously.
Of course. And if you weren't to know that it was taped, then you would just, and if you're watching it live, you would just still get that feeling and vibe that it's live. You know what I mean? Like it's going back to, you know, sort of the days of the Monday Night Wars where WCW Nitro was live and Monday Night Raw was taped in the afternoon, and they would put it on at the same time, and WCW would have spies in WWF crowds, and when Nitro would come on, and they would give away, yeah, or even all the way up until 1999, Monday Night Raw was taped, and WCW would give spoilers away on their live broadcast of Nitro.
Yep.
And the I just remember that, like, the huge backfire for them was January 4, 1999, when Mick Foley, when Mankind won the WWF title and it was taped, they come out and said, yeah, the WCW come out and said that, yeah, that Mick Foley, Mankind wins their heavyweight championship. Everybody turned off Nitro.
Yeah.
And turned on Raw. So, yeah, that was kind of like one of the all-time backfires of WCW, yeah, sort of giving out spoilers and everything like that, because everybody just sort of had gravitated to what Mick Foley was doing with that character.
Well, that to what everyone keeps saying, that was, to me, probably the downfall of WCW.
I think that was the start.
The start of it. There was probably other stuff, but that was general. That was like,
there is, if you listen to Chris Jericho, if you listen to Talk Is Jericho, his podcast, if you listen to him talk about WCW, he doesn't ever have a bad thing to say about them. He just says that their hierarchy, if you're a top star, you will always be a top star. And if you're a bit of a mid-card sort of guy, you will never get to be a top star. And that's just the way that they went, because they were too top heavy.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why Jericho and all those guys, you know, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, Perry Saturn, all of those guys all jumped ship, because they were never going to get that main event status at WCW because they were too top heavy.
So with this, it ended up being over two nights. There was a couple of late withdrawals. It was the week before, I believe.
Still a late withdrawal.
It is, and in the grand scheme of a main event, because one was Roman Reigns, who was supposed to face Goldberg for the title, due to his, mainly due to the coronavirus and him sort of still, well, battling, but I guess getting over the leukemia.
He's in remission, but I guess it's a smart thing for him to do to have to pull out just due to health reasons. He, not that he really had an option, but, you know, just for his own personal health, I guess. As we sort of discussed there a little bit before we come on, the Miz actually rocked up to taping of SmackDown a couple of weeks ago and was crook. So, which, you know, realistically he should know better than that, especially in the world that we're in at the moment. And yeah, it pretty much gave Roman Reigns no option but to pull out of that title match, which must have been hard.
Yeah, definitely, not even on him, but I guess on the actual the script writers, because they really had to work out what the hell they were going to do.
No, well, that's right, and that's obviously one of the last matches on night one, so we'll get into that a little bit later as well.
Well, the first match was a kickoff show match, Cesaro versus Drew Gulak. It was just one of those, I guess, typical kickoff show matches.
Yeah, kickoff show match. I like the little UFO move that that Cesaro did on him, spinning him around his shoulders with no hands. He's too good for a pre-show match against Drew Gulak. Like, that's so disrespectful.
He's too talented. I don't get what they don't see in him. Like,
no, I don't understand.
I don't get it.
You've got a match that's not too far along with Baron Corbin and Elias. Like, I just don't rate either of them. But Baron Corbin couldn't wrestle or talk his way out of a wet paper bag. And yet they just keep giving him opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. And Cesaro just keeps toiling away, doing what he does. And yeah, I thought that was a little disrespectful.
At least
he got on the show.
And at least he got the win too, because he doesn't get many wins.
And he gets the W, so that's not too bad.
Next was the women's tag team match, the Kabuki Warriors versus Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. So it was pretty hard hitting. It wasn't too bad.
I thought that was a decent sort of match to kick off the actual show. After that kickoff show match. There was lots of yelling in Japanese by.
I love that they do that.
Which adds to it. It just accentuates it even more when there's nobody in the crowd and they're still yelling at the top of each other's lungs.
Well, it seemed to be the theme during the night.
There was a lot of big bumps in it though. Like, Alexa Bliss took a really hard shot to the face. When she was sort of hung up in the ropes and Kairi Sane sort of did that double stomp. I guess they're sort of supposed to do it to the shoulders, but sort of caught her on the side of the face a little bit and it sort of rocked her a little bit. But overall, I didn't think this was a bad match. Like it was well worked. They've worked together before. Bliss and Cross have been together for a little while now as a tag team in the women's division. I didn't mind this match at all.
Well, they end up winning Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. I think, to me personally, I think Asuka's too good to be in a tag team. I don't know. I like the way her character, I don't have to understand what she says. I just like how she's just way too talented to me
It's become the way that she's sort of come off NXT and come into the main roster. She's come in with a lot of hype. And, she had that WrestleMania loss, was it last year against Charlotte, which there was a lot of – was that last year? Was it 2 years ago? Man, I lost track of time there. She came in with a lot of hype, and I don't think she's really lived up to it that much. She's had a reign as the women's champ, I just don't think she's lived up to expectations. Whether or not they're using her correctly or not, in that women's division, obviously this is just a sort of stopgap for her, being in the tag team division. But bigger things surely are coming for her.
The next match was the one you were talking about before, which is a bit of a it's like a filler match. I love calling them filler matches. King Corbin.
That should have been
versus Elias. That should have been a kickoff show. I didn't pick anything out of it except that I think Elias was demanding. It was Elias or Corbin. I think it was Corbin demanding Colin JBL to acknowledge how good he's been going.
He was yelling his head off at the commentary guys, saying how good he is, and it's just like no, I would never acknowledge that in a million years that you are any good at this professional wrestling business. he's a great athlete. I'll give him he's a great athlete, but man, his promos are horrible. I just don't like his wrestling style at all. He's rotten on the microphone. I don't get what their infatuation with him is. Like, just giving him opportunity after opportunity, especially heavyweight championship opportunity as well. Not just mid titles, whether it's the Intercontinental title or the US title, which he actually won. I just don't. And he wins the King of the Ring, which they're only doing every like 3 or 4 years now, which just, I don't know. I don't get what the push is for him.
No, I don't get it either. Probably just that prototypical big man that McMahon likes.
Exactly. But, you know, yeah, generally Vince is pretty good with sort of picking his big guys to, you know, to be that. But he's got this one wrong.
The next match was Elias won that, but not that I really cared.
that was my toilet break match, like early toilet break.
Next match was a women's Raw Championship match, Becky Lynch versus Shayna Baszler. I was surprised with the positioning of this match. I thought it might have started the actual, it was never going to be the final match on night one, but first match is always, I guess, that sort of, you know, get the crowd pumping. Not that there was a crowd, but I guess
if this is a different year, though, it might have been, a good kickoff match. The only I don't know. I expected a little bit out of this match, and I was a little bit disappointed in it.
Yeah, I thought so too. I was surprised Lynch won for starters, and then secondly, I felt like it could have been. I'm surprised I didn't do it into like a no disqualification match or something like that. Because
for them to just go at it.
Well,
they built it up really well, I think, over the month or 5 weeks, even before the Elimination Chamber, where Baszler just went through and just absolutely destroyed everybody.
Yeah,
which you kind of knew that was going to happen, and that was going to be the build up to this match at WrestleMania. I thought they built it up really well, and I was really disappointed in the match. The quality of the match was good. I just didn't like that it only went for about 7.5 minutes, it just ended so quickly.
Yeah, it just, and I, again, I don't, I mean, I don't
it
know.
It could have
just
been different if there was a crowd. I think they might have worked that match different if there was a crowd. But the quick ending. I really like, you know, Baszler, you know, as a performer. You know, she's got that good combination of strength and submission, you know, and technique. So I think she could be, you know, bigger things are coming from her in the future too, I think. But she's a strong thing. Holy moly, she was throwing Lynch around like a friggin' rag doll. It was ridiculous.
The next match was I was watching someone do something silly. The next match was Sami Zayn and Daniel Bryan for the Intercontinental title. The build-up was a bit weird.
It's too quick of a build-up. It's just one of those matches where it was a throw-together.
How did the three people of Sami Zayn, Cesaro and Nakamura decide when that was a 3-on-1 match that they decided Sami Zayn was the Intercontinental Champion?
Yeah,
when he won it. I'm taking it. I don't know, but that was the pay-per-view before. But so it was a good match.
I guess they had to give Sami Zayn sort of a little bit of recognition. You know, as an individual singles champion, you know, him and KO, Kevin Owens come in sort of around about the same time, and you know, Kevin Owens has obviously been a few time Intercontinental champion and a heavyweight champion, and Sami Zayn's just sort of left wallowing in the background. Both of them have dealt with injuries lately in the last 12 months, but I sort of don't mind the recognition of getting Sami Zayn at least one sort of singles title to sort of, you know, recognize it, because I don't mind him as well. I thought this match could have been, I think, you know, obviously again with a crowd, I think they could have, I reckon they could have really worked this match well. And not to say that it wasn't a well-worked match, but it just, for me, you've seen the caliber of matches that Daniel Bryan has been in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And this, I don't know, this just didn't quite get to his standard, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. I think, to me, I could see this, I guess, feud continuing, because that match wasn't, I could, you know, those two are way too skilled enough to not have it.
Not a lot of closure, I guess, to say in that match. You know, it was a good classic old school type of match where, you know, Sami Zayn would really sell being the heel. And, you know, getting in the ring and then running back out and you know, taking up to a 7 count to get back in. And, you know, just that real sort of classic sort of trying to really put over that he didn't want any piece of Daniel Bryan at all. I thought it was a little disappointing. I think both of those guys can do something a lot better.
Mm-hmm. The next one was a triple threat SmackDown Tag Team Championship match. It was a ladder match, actually, with the single competitors. So we'll explain why in a second, but it was John Morrison versus Kofi Kingston versus Jimmy Uso. Reason being?
Well, like we said before, The Miz rocked up to a taping of SmackDown a little bit under the weather, which, like we said, you know, he's been around long enough to know that, I get it, it's WrestleMania season and everything like that, but he's, especially in the times that, you know, that we're living in at the moment, he's just got to be a little bit smarter than that. And just sort of say, okay, I can't come in.
I don't know. It would have been interesting if all six were there, but it was for those three guys. You know, I think just especially having John Morrison there, it was a really good match. It was a pretty decent match.
I don't like John Morrison at all. I never liked him before.
I don't hate him.
I don't like him now. As I said, athletic, yeah, great, yes. But I just don't like that sort of style of everything has to be a 450 flip on it. It's too much flash. It just doesn't resonate with me at all. You know, it might be good for the younger audience, but that sort of style just doesn't resonate with me at all. Like, it got into it straight away. Like, it just ladders just came straight in.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of good bumps.
Yeah.
I didn't really think there was a lot of innovation, do you know what I mean, in the ladder match until the ending.
Yeah, the ending. Because
you've got one shot to pull that off.
Yeah.
And they pulled it off.
Yeah. So I liked the ending.
That was really well done. Yeah, I thought that was really well done.
They were all holding that tight, the whole title rigged. As like, I think Uso.
And that's why I don't like that stupid that thing that is just hooked up
that
onto.
You gotta pull the
belts off.
Yeah.
So you win a ladder match, you don't just unhook a thing. It's not the Money in the Bank briefcase. You pull the titles off.
Well, that's what I mean. Technically, so Uso unhooked it from the cable suspending from the ceiling, but then when they battled over the belts, Morrison was knocked off and just sort of grabbed them and held on. So, technically,
unbelievable how that you got one shot at that. Yeah. Because if that doesn't come off, what do you do?
Yeah, well, that's it. You just have to keep.
If he clutches at air, like, what do they do?
I don't know. You just have to play. You have to keep playing. I don't know, actually. Maybe that's why it was taped. Maybe they did.
You ripped at the belts.
Maybe that's five takes. Maybe they did clutch it on the first four takes, and that was a fifth take.
Well, that's true.
It is taping. It is taped. So right.
Yeah, you got to think of these things.
Yeah.
A little bit of creative editing.
So yeah, Morrison ended up retaining that. Well, Morrison and Miz, technically, that was a tag team championship.
Yeah, easiest paycheck Miz will get.
Do we talk about the 24/7 championship?
Oh, for God's sakes.
Okay. Cool, because I don't want to either, so we'll move on. I had no intention.
That is the biggest joke that's getting around WWE at the moment. You know my opinion on it. I think it's pathetic. But anyway.
The next match was was Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins. The reason I'm saying I don't know, I don't know if I liked it. But then there was parts I liked and parts I didn't like. I got another one where I thought could be a lot better.
This is like DB and Sami Zayn. Both of these guys are definitely capable of better. You know, if you maybe raise the stakes a little bit more. I still enjoyed the match.
Yeah.
I liked
a lot of trash talking you could hear.
Yeah, heaps of trash talking.
Owen's just like, you can hear him say, you son of a bitch.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
I like the lead up to it. I've always been ever since KO stepped in from NXT. Like I just a cocky dude. You know, he's the NXT champ. beat Cena on his first night. That's probably why I sort of resonate to him a lot.
No, but he didn't take the year.
I love what he does in the ring.
Yeah.
He's a great talker. Yeah. He's one of those guys who can be who can work the crowd both ways. He's a good heel and he's a good baby face.
Yeah, correct.
In today's times, that's a rare talent.
He's one of the few that can do that, actually. You're exactly right. I don't know. Obviously, to me, it felt set up that it was always going to be his win.
The way that they sort of talked about Rollins as being that big game player at WrestleMania, look what I've done at WrestleMania, blah, blah, blah. I think it was pretty much given to sort of give KO that little bit of momentum because he just had the crap beaten out of him, you know, week after week after week leading up to it. So it was just sort of one of those matches that was possibly set up, for him to win. I'm kind of glad that he's a guy that's taking over one of the most electrifying moves in sports entertainment. And we're not talking about the people's elbow.
Yes, we are. That's one of the most devastating moves ever.
Like that big yellow boot dropping on people.
I did find it interesting that they, Rollins got out of the match pretty much straight away, and they end up just changing it to a no DQ match.
I didn't see that one coming. Seen the disqualification and I went, wow, you're gonna end it like that? Like that's terrible. And then KO gets on the microphone and says, nah, we're not doing it that way. Sorry, we'll start it again as a no DQ match. So I like that. That sort of not so much caught me off guard a little bit, but I really liked that sort of aspect to it where he just went, nah, we're gonna keep rolling with this. This isn't gonna happen.
Yeah, because that's the way Owens comes across. It's like he doesn't sort of follow the rules and like he'll break tradition, so to speak, and just say, nah. Sorry, I know TV's rolling, but this is what we're doing, so which is good.
There's only a certain amount of guys, I think, that are on the roster. There's only a very select few on the roster that could probably be able to pull that sort of, that character and that sort of stunt off.
Next match was the Universal title. I wasn't the greatest match, but
You can't even say that I was disgusted in it.
No, I'm not defending the match at all. It was Goldberg versus Braun Strowman. It was, to me, the prototypical quick match it was going to be. Like, Goldberg just doesn't do long matches, which is ridiculous in itself.
There was no
build-up to the match, so there was that. And I just think they're two guys that that feed off a crowd, especially Goldberg. It was a terrible match. I mean, there's no two ways about it.
The entrances took longer than the match.
Yeah.
And the walkway is like 20 feet. this is your heavyweight championship.
This is why I didn't like having even if Roman Reigns end up being there. This is why I didn't like Goldberg winning the title.
Super showdown. Why do they keep killing Bray Wyatt's momentum? They did it when he had the title a couple of years ago. Only held it for a month. He won it in one of the most brutal Elimination Chamber matches going around. He wins the title. He earns the championship in the Elimination Chamber, and they do a stupid House of Horrors match with Randy Orton. And even that was, and then they give the title to Orton. It was pathetic, and now they do this where they screw Wyatt out of the title again. I just don't get. He's one of the most compelling characters that's going around. Original characters. This is his doing, his idea, his creativeness, and WWE just keeps stomping on it. It gives me the shit.
To be honest. Man. We'll talk about his match later, but I think LeBron won the title after 4 power slams, but I think they'll have a few.
I think he'll go back
for the title. But no, but I think the Fiend or Bray Wyatt will go back for the title.
I just don't understand the point of him dropping the title at Super Showdown.
Well, to me, clearly they didn't think he'd sell the pay per view. And if we talk about his match later, he did pretty much. There's two matches that sold the pay per view.
Well, I don't get why they don't have trust in him. He's one of the most compelling characters since he's come back as Bray Wyatt. He has. Yeah, like it was a couple of years ago. He has the whole world in his hands. He's got it. He just manipulates the crowd in the palm of his hand. He's compelling. People gravitate to him and the character.
Yeah.
I don't understand what WWE creative, why they keep nuking everything that he does.
Well, that's the thing. It's interesting. He's in a really weird spot because they don't nuke his ideas. All the stuff that he's doing is his ideas, the matches, you know, the character, everything. But they just nuke his chances of being on the top, which I don't get. They don't nuke ideas.
They've had plenty of people that have been on top that can't handle. Well, not so much can't handle, but they can't carry. And you carry, you know, some more, you know, the brand, but he can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of people out there think he can.
I agree. A lot of fans do too. So I don't get it. And that's what usually Vince McMahon follows is that what the fans say. He always has. He always has. I don't get why.
No, he always has. But it just befuddles me the way that. Yeah, that they keep, you know, like I said, they just keep nuking his chances. Like he could have really good title runs and you know be on TV every week and it's whether or not it's a little bit too complex, you know, of a character to be out there every week and whether they could simplify it a little bit and still not lose, you know, not lose what he is. Do you know what I mean?
But okay, but I'll put it this way: if he kept the title. And it was clearly going to be Roman Reigns versus The Fiend at WrestleMania, if that was the case. And because WrestleMania is always a feel-good sort of WrestleMania, would you still be happy if he lost to the Roman Reigns?
No, of course not.
No, so I think... I agree. No, but I agree too.
At least he's walked in, earned his chance to be the heavyweight champion at WrestleMania. And if he loses, okay... All well and good, you know, we know how much that WWE tries to ram Roman Reigns down everyone's throat, more power to him. Like, you know, if he's the next golden child, he's the next, you know, incarnation of John Cena, just trying to ram him down everybody's throat. Whether he's liked or whether he's not, you know, WWE just keep throwing him out there And that's, I mean, he's compelling enough, but I just think, you know, you've got to let, if somebody's a hot guy and they're having their time in the sun, you run with it.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to. You have to. That's
the way the business goes.
There's two people that should be on top, and I think we're both in the same agreement here. Bray Wyatt and then Kevin Owens, both of them, but on the opposite shows. That's pretty much. But the last match of the night was... nearly one of the best matches I've seen in years. It was.
I didn't know what to expect from this.
No, I didn't know either. It was Undertaker versus AJ Styles in what they called a Boneyard match. And the first every time I see Boneyard, I'm thinking the old Macho Man Bonesaw is ready. That's all I think when I see. I don't know why. Just Boneyard Bonesaw. Yeah. It was like a movie. It was like a short movie. It was a cinematic experience.
It was extremely cinematic, like one of two sort of cinematic, entities that they had throughout this WrestleMania. But yeah, they filmed.
You were just the arrival.
They filmed for about 8 hours. They filmed for about 8 hours to do this match.
Yeah.
You know, in a secluded Florida, you know, farm somewhere that they did a purpose-built stage and everything for. It took them like 5 days to build the stage. I didn't know what to expect. I like AJ coming in and the hearse.
Yeah, yeah. So just from the start, so he coming in
and then popping out of a coffin.
And then the Undertaker riding in on his old motorcycle with Metallica playing over.
Oh man, that's awesome. That is awesome, man. I just
I don't know if that's what he's coming back to, but
I've been waiting for a couple of years now for him to sort of revert back to that American badass.
Well, I don't know if that's gonna happen. That's the thing. I don't know.
No, but I've just been hanging for it for him to come back as that, you know, to be sort of more of his natural personality of himself. And apparently, yeah, there was sort of no real sort of script written for this. It was just they did a lot of ad lib, a lot of off the cuff sort of stuff, a lot of talking. I really liked that sort of that part of it. Right at the start, the Undertaker cuts his arm on glass in the hearse, and apparently they just ran with it. They're just like, no, we don't want to patch him up. We don't want it. We sort of we think that's going to be a way to run. And you hear the dead man go, son of a bitch, as he looks down at it, and he's just like, oh man. You would have thought when they were filming it, they would have went, all right, cut, let's stop.
Yeah, but maybe that played into it. I don't know. If this is what Undertaker can do, and look, I think the live experience is nothing else. Trust, it's nothing else. But I don't mind these kind of things. If they do these every so often, you can't do it all the time.
Yeah, that's right. You can do these sorts of things with him now, not in front of a live audience.
Right. He doesn't need to be.
Ah, that's right. And you can really, you know, ham it up, so to speak. Do you know what I mean? You can really make it, you know, supernatural and things like that. Look, the things that they do with live crowds are still pretty cool with how they work things. But now
the druids come out. Those druids come out of the light, and like you can just see all this, like, all the leaves blowing past. It was ridiculous. It wasn't your prototypical match, obviously. Basically, they just keep hammering each other.
That was just a street fight.
Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson were there, but basically they got beat.
They had the crap beaten out of them too.
So the nice little
hug at the end just before he boots him into the grave.
Yeah.
Sort of, I guess, a little bit of touch of realty to it, to go, yep, you know, a bit of respect there, a bit of love, and it's just, all right, cool. And then he sort of boots him in the face and down to the down into the 6-foot grave he goes. And I just
loved how he begged him and said, don't throw me in the grave, and Taker said he wouldn't, and then he just ends up booting him in there anyway.
Kicks him in the face. And the covering up. Yeah, essentially, yeah, it was a buried alive match.
It was a
buried alive match. Like, you know, let's call it what it is. And his little hand sticking out of the grave, a la 1996, the first ever buried alive match between The Undertaker and Mankind. Those two told some unbelievable stories and did some great matches.
Yeah.
The Undertaker and Mankind. Holy mackerel. The chemistry those two was just out of control, man. Those two were just made for each other.
Foley loved that match. He came out on his Twitter and just said that was, you know, that was up there. It was just an insane. And I think that's having someone like AJ Styles is a pretty seasoned veteran as well. Like he knew exactly what he was doing. So because it was ad lib. So he's great.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
he's another guy he has been on top, but he should be on top too.
He's a top guy. Like I don't generally rate a lot of the TNA talent that comes across. There's pretty much only two that I have that little bit of tiny ounce of respect for, and that's him and Samoa Joe. The other guys that come across, they're worthless to me. Those two guys are definitely top tier talent. You know, and AJ's been around for a long time as well. Like, you know, even going back to the late 90s, he had matches in the WWE. He had dark matches at live shows in the WWE, AJ Styles. You could look those up.
Yeah.
You know, as a young man. So, you know, it's good that he's finally got his opportunity. You know, he had that decent long run as the WWE champion and rightly so, you know, well deserved to him, you know, for putting his time in. And now they see, sort of reverted back to that gimmick infringement original club. I just keep calling it gimmick infringement. You can't be doing the click symbol and doing all that. It's just that. Sorry.
So that finished night one. Night two was Sunday. Kickoff show was another sort of I don't even know why they do these kickoff matches personally, unless they're going to be good or at least something. But that was Liv Morgan and Natalya. No build up, no nothing.
Once again, to me, that's disrespectful to Natalya. I've sort of said this for a long time now. They are so disrespectful to Natalya in the way that they do her matches, the way that that she doesn't get as much opportunity as people who have got family lineage in the WWE. Ric Flair. Excuse me, sorry.
Wow, that's the next match, but yeah, true.
Again, disrespectful.
But even Liv Morgan, she had a little bit of a build-up, not coming into Mania, but she came out with the whole Lana thing and then just went away again. I get that. No, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying they were trying to build her up, like, and she just went again.
And then all of a sudden it's just moved on to Natalya. It's just one of those sort of throw together. Hey, you two want a match? All right, it'll be the kickoff on night two. Still disrespectful to Natalya.
So Liv Morgan end up winning that. So it's just a roll up.
That's right. Exactly. Once again, more copious amounts of disrespect.
The next match was the NXT Women's Championship match, Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair. It was a really good match. It went only 30 minutes. It was a really
that was a good match of Charlotte just pummeling the absolute living you know what out of Rhea Ripley's left knee.
The way she was like she, I don't know if she's turning into a heel or not, but or if she's coming across as a heel, because the way she like there was yelling out like all the stuff during the match, like you know this is my place, and
Charlotte Flair is better as a heel.
This is exactly what you just said 5 minutes ago, that she didn't need to win that match unless they're trying to do NXT ratings.
That's what I was going to ask you is this is just a poor attempt, but this is an attempt to, or, you know, of WWE trying to raise the profile of NXT and sort of having it on par with Raw and SmackDown. And it just can't happen. SmackDown has been trying for 20 years to try and get itself on that same plateau as Monday Night Raw, and they just whether they don't want it to happen or it doesn't, I don't get it. It really sort of irks me the way that they do that. But like you said, Charlotte absolutely didn't have to win this match.
Insane.
A little bit better, but I've sort of heard rumors about why. Why Rhea Ripley had to essentially drop the title.
Yeah, well, I was just about to say that, is that apparently her visa was up. So she was forced to leave the US and return to Australia, which basically means during this coronavirus, unless, like,
she ain't going back for a while.
Oh, well, she may, but it depends.
Yeah, but she can't be the current champion.
No, she can't be the current champion. Yeah. So, but isn't that just like a... whose fault is that? Is that her fault? Is it WWE's fault? I mean, like, for a visa to expire,
right. It might be a bit of an oversight, but the only thing I could think of is it's sort of crept up on them. Then all of a sudden, this coronavirus has sort of come in, and then it could be on both. It could be on WWE. It could be on Rhea Ripley, because it might just be as simple as going to the American embassy or the Australian embassy in America and going, right, oh, cool, we're just going to reapply for her working visa. That might have been just a condition that she's only gone over there on it, and she might not have thought that she was going to get the opportunities that she did, inside a year of being at the Performance Center there, and she's exceeded expectations, and it might just be a simple slip of the mind.
And it's rumors, because there's other reports saying that she's still in America by herself, so who knows? I mean, I kind of think, to me... with that match, it was a great match. I just think Charlotte Flair won purely because I think they're because
of course Flair.
Yeah, of course, but I think because NXT is on the same night as AEW, and I still think they're trying to get that.
That's what I mean by them trying to raise the profile of NXT to try and give them, a legitimate shot at trying to combat, AEW and a little bit of the bubbly. So the stuff that I've watched of AEW, man, I don't mind it.
Mm. Little bits.
Yeah, I think. It's going to take them a while to sort of build that, you know, to build that rapport up with it, with everybody, because they essentially started from scratch. But it's going to take them a little while to sort of get that, you know, that big nature and that bit of a following that, you know, obviously they're not going to come after Monday Night Raw or anything like that. But, you know, all they've got to do is beat, you know, beat the other wrestling show that's on that night. And all he can do is just keep building. Tony Khan has got... He's got money up the wazoo, so he's.
Well, that's true. I don't know. Does he? Because he's trying to rebuild his squad. That's a whole different story, like show NFL. I don't know if he's got money up his wazoo. He might, but he's trying to rebuild. Yeah. They seem to get rid of money, and anyway, that's a whole different NFL thing for the Jaguars.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's right. Throwing money away in Jacksonville.
The next match was a match that wasn't built up, but to me, I'm a big fan of Aleister Black. I love the way he wrestles. I love his little gimmick. He doesn't have to say much, which is great. I call
him the evolution of Steve Blackman.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, if anybody out there remembers the Lethal Weapon, Steve Blackman in the late 90s, early 2000s, martial arts, you know, type guy if you want to look at some fun from Google Steve, the Lethal Weapon, Steve Blackman, he was kind of cool.
I get it.
Like I said, the evolution of him, you know, he's not the same as him, but I just, you know, he's in that mold, you know, he's got that. Yeah, that martial arts type background and everything, and he uses that to great effect. And the other thing, I just can't stand Bobby Lashley. I can't stand him.
Yeah, and I can't stand like Lana. It's just that whole thing.
That's one of the worst storylines I've seen in 5 years. No word of a lie. How did that just keep going and going? I wanted to blow my brains out every time that I heard that music and them come out and everything. And it's just, and once again, it's one of those guys in Rusev who was, he was in a bit of a hot streak, and now they just stomp him out as well.
Well, it's funny you say that, because the next match, it's sort of the same sort of setup a little bit, was Otis versus Dolph Ziggler. That's one
that
guy.
That had a little bit of sort of story, you know, going back to...
I don't like Otis. I don't get the fascination with him.
I mean, he's athletic for a big sort of, you know, chunky round dude.
I don't know. You're right, it had a bit of a build-up, and then he ended up getting the girl at the end.
He's done well.
The last the lead-in show, the SmackDown before that, was that would pretty much all come out what happened. That it was a Sonya Deville basically got them to sort of break up through Dolph Ziggler, but it was the mysterious person that I think I already know who is, mysterious person that had all this footage or hacked all this footage apparently.
Do tell.
I think it's but only because of his gloves. I think it's Mustafa Ali, because he's got that circle sort of thing on his. I don't know. Just if it's a different edge for him to go, I don't know. But I think that's that's who it is. I think so.
Fair enough. Yep.
Look, it was that typical sort of. You know, he got the girl in the end, so it wasn't bad. It wasn't the greatest match, but it wasn't bad.
Nah, but man, it was Ziggler. Oh, he took some pretty heavy knocks in that match, man.
Ziggler,
Ziggler took some big hits. Like, you know, there's a couple of times where he hit the floor on the outside. I thought he sort of did a good job in sort of selling that match. You know, I'm not Ziggler's biggest fan by any means. I don't think he should be anywhere near any sort of world title or anything like that. And unfortunately, he's got two of them. I'm just not his biggest fan. That was a well sort of worked and deserved match for WrestleMania, just purely through the story and, you know, and what sort of might have transpired before and after that match.
The next match was interesting. Edge and Randy Orton, the last man standing match. What did you think?
Look, you know, for
great build up.
Unbelievable build up.
Yeah, and that's what I'm. That's why.
Unbelievable build up.
This is right. Where I think your side comes from.
Nine years in the making.
Yeah.
You know, brothers on the road, tag team champions. That just the way that they'd sort of that they'd done that. Look for me, I think it. Yeah, obviously the Boneyard match was most likely the match of WrestleMania. I think this was pretty close. I think this they told a story really well. They just beat each other senseless, and you could just see that they were effed by the end of it. They were wrecked.
It was a great match, and then I thought it could have been more violent, to be honest. But
of course it could have.
I think. Because it was a last man standing match, I think it was one of those matches that like they would feed off a crowd big time.
Massively feed off a crowd. And that's one of those sort of matches where you'd think, okay, this match would have stolen the show.
Yeah.
Like absolutely if there was 74,000 people there at Raymond James Stadium. This would have absolutely stolen the show.
So many good things, like the ending, even where Ed stopped in to count just so he can give him a concerto and then start counting again.
Yeah, single man concerto. Like, but the it's just even the way that it started, like everybody's waiting for Orton to come out, and all of a sudden he's a cameraman and he comes into the ring, he puts the camera down and he comes into the ring just straight up RKO, and you're just like, oh no, don't tell me it's going to end like this straight away.
It started cool.
It was great. I don't know if you sort of seen this or noticed it throughout the match. The referee checking on Edge a lot.
Which that's
fine. You know, he's obviously come back from that neck injury and everything like that. So you know they're well within their sort of duty of care, I guess, to sort of take care of him like that. Did you see when they were in the offices there? And Edge pulled himself up onto the ceiling over the top of one of the office desks, and he pulls himself up and then does like an elbow drop on top of Orton. Did you see what I saw on the roof?
No, what?
Office? Did it look like a piece of Hell in a Cell?
No, maybe. I didn't see that.
I don't know. Have a look at it again. It's while they're wrestling in one of the offices there. And yeah, they're on top of the desk, and you see Edge pull himself up like, and it's a fence. And he pulls himself up. And
maybe. I'd have to go back out.
I think it just looks like pieces of Hell in a Cell.
Wow.
I could be wrong. I didn't rewind it because I was pressed for time to sort of keep running through and watching it. But that's just what it looked like for me.
Maybe. It just looked
odd.
For the foreseeable future, they're going to have their matches there, so you know, maybe.
Well, that's right, yeah. Oh, I think that's sort of a cool thing to have, you know, in like a corporate office. We'll just have some Hell in a Cell hanging off the roof.
Maybe it was to put there as a teaser for Hell in a Cell matches coming up or something.
Oh, maybe isn't Hell in a Cell usually a little bit later on in the year?
No, I mean someone's going to have a Hell. Well, I suppose that they try, they do the gimmicks. Yeah, no one has it during their thing.
Yeah, I don't like
it. Which is dumb.
Yeah, I don't like this.
The only one I do like is Money in the Bank, but
The Money in the Bank's awesome. But yeah, gimmick pay per views like Hell in the Cell or TLC
I agree.
I love the Elimination Chamber. I think that's the evolution of the Hell in the Cell. I think Elimination Chamber is just it's excellent. But yeah, I do like that. But I don't like that. That's just lazy. Thinking about pay-per-view title names. I'll just call it Hell in a Cell. Like, that's just lazy.
Next match was a Raw Tag Team title, Street Profits versus Angel Garza and Austin Theory. Yep, I thought the same thing. The match went pretty short. I'm not a big fan of the Street Profits. It's like they're overhyping themselves.
You get other people to sort of hype. Sit there and sort of hype yourselves up. I'm not the biggest fan. They are 100% crowd feeders.
Oh, 100% big time.
Crowd feeders. So that big they just time. Had, yeah, they just that there was going to be, no atmosphere, no nothing to that match.
The only saving grace of that match to me, because I think she's awesome, is Zelina Vega. So, and you know who she's married to in real life? Aleister Black.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. That's yeah, interesting. Yeah, when I heard it and then I started looking for stuff, yeah, it's interesting. But he's actually well-spoken. Like, it's interesting he doesn't use the mic that much because he's extremely well-spoken.
Yeah, yet they give the microphone to duds like Baron Corbin and try and get him to speak. Ridiculous. So, the same as Brock Lesnar. Like, Brock Lesnar is pretty good on the microphone.
Yeah, he's another I agree.
Yeah, he's got his puppet. To him. He takes it to the next level.
Yeah.
That Brock could never do himself.
No. I do like when Brock grabs a mic sometimes and does little things. Like when he grabbed that mic once and he said, "Here, Paul, say something stupid." It's just really like it. That was awesome.
He's good. He's good on the microphone. That would just, for me, if you were that, if you were Brock Lesnar, that would just piss me off. They just have to stand there and just let him do all the talking for you. And he stands there and gives a bit of a smile and a grin and a laugh every now and then. It's just like, the only reason I think he does that is because he's just like, wow, WWE's paying me to do this. All I have to do is come out here and stand there. This is great. This is the easiest money that anyone will ever make in the history of making money.
The next match was five women elimination SmackDown Women's Championship match. Bayley versus Sasha Banks versus Lacey Evans versus Tamina versus Naomi.
Decent.
Yeah, it was. The classic, let's take out the big person first. So they took out Tamina pretty early. They all ganged up.
Five-way elimination match. So, that was always going to happen.
It played into what I thought it was going to be. The final three ended up being Evans, Bayley, and Banks. Because everyone had the idea that Banks may turn on Bayley, but that didn't actually happen. She actually helped her win, which was interesting.
Ah, that's right. You see the sort of replays afterwards, and when Banks was being covered and eliminated by Lacey Evans, Bayley they had a nice little strategic camera angle of Bayley just sitting there with big googly eyes looking at her as she's being counted out, and Bayley not coming to help her so-called friend in Sasha Banks. So, that's obviously going to be, for some food for thought in the coming, in the coming SmackDown shows, whether they sort of have another story with Bayley and Sasha Banks, as it regards to that sort of little snippet.
Haven't those two fought enough? But that's what I don't get.
No, they have. They have.
I feel like I've seen them fight all the time.
They just keep going back to the well.
I mean, they put on great matches, but it's just
and that's the thing. It's unfortunate that there's only one essentially one women's title. They've got the tag team champions then tag team championships there now for the women, which is always good. But they don't have that sort of second tier championship like the men do. Like the Intercontinental title and the US title. Mm. So it sort of makes it a little bit hard where you've got some pretty decent talent there on the women's roster. There's only realistically one title for them all to share around.
The next match was one of the most perplexing matches I've ever seen. John Cena versus The Fiend Bray Wyatt in a Firefly Funhouse match. It was, God, for start to finish, I loved it. I don't know about you.
I don't know what to say. I don't. I thought that was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
But that's what's good about it. Bray Wyatt, so I read into a bit of it because obviously...
I wanted to see Bray Wyatt beat the absolute holy hell out of John Cena. I don't want to see no theatrical BS. I want to see Bray Wyatt pummel the absolute shite out of John Cena. That's what I want to see.
It was weird. It's like Cena ended up beating Cena. He brought out his ruthless aggression gear with the big SmackDown fist coming back, which was cool.
Kind of cool. Oh, just, yeah.
It was.
I cringed the whole match. I just cringed.
It was nowhere near like the Boneyard. Don't get me wrong. But I had that sort of feel, like, as in Bray Wyatt
that theatrical type thing, which, you know, which is the kind of character that Bray Wyatt is. You know, he's in the mold of the Undertaker. You know, that indestructible sort of force, like they were building him up to be, until he was unceremoniously beat by Goldberg, which is the biggest pile of crap I've ever seen in my life. But do you know what I mean? Like, that's just the way that they've sort of built, you know, Bray Wyatt up to just be this indestructible, you know, sort of, I guess, supernatural, sort of, you know, freaky, nightmarish sort of force. It was kind of funny to sort of see, you know, them go through the evolution of John Cena and everything.
Where, the puppet of Vince McMahon come out and say, "Hey, where's Ruthless Aggression?" And he
was hilarious. That was funny.
I don't think Cena did any moves or anything, that whole thing.
He swung at air a few times trying to say Ruthless Aggression, and did a few of his rhymes with his gigantically oversized New York Yankees jersey, which looked ridiculous. The sleeves look ridiculous on it. The baseball players don't wear sleeves like that. You'd never be able to swing the bat.
And then, Bray ended up playing the Kurt Angle sort of side for the Ruthless Aggression. If Bray does this kind of stuff in his head, it'd be awesome to see what he can do with that character. He already has done awesome things, but...
No, exactly. They've rewarded him with two world championships, so, you know, that they... And that's the thing that just perplexes me even more, that they've rewarded him for this character, the way that he's doing everything, with two world championships.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of guys that are getting around at the moment, you know, like, you know, not to say that they're that sort of caliber yet, you know, like Sami Zayn and, you know, Samoa Joe, Cesaro, you know, those sorts of guys that have been Rusev, guys like that sort of, you know, toil away and have had those hot streak moments, but they still haven't captured a world championship in this WWE. Obviously Samoa Joe has been a world champion in TNA, which are totally illegitimate. The only world championships that came in WWE.
I agree.
But you know what I mean? Like, you know, there's guys that have been out there that have had those hot streaks, those hot runs, and they haven't rewarded them with, you know, with heavyweight championship gold, and he's had it twice now.
Well, they did reward one guy that had that hot streak, and that's Drew McIntyre.
That's right.
So the final match was Brock Lesnar versus Drew for the WWE title. Drew come into this winning the Royal Rumble and just pummeling everybody with that claymore, ridiculously good kick.
Did you see sort of, you know, a few little similarities to both heavyweight championship matches?
Like how they were short and sweet, and they basically hit their finishes. Short and sweet, and
there was a total of four moves throughout two matches.
I did, but I felt this one, it painted that well. I think it needed it, kind of thing, just to put Drew all the way over. The other one I just couldn't buy because Braun didn't really even need to be there, and Goldberg doesn't. I don't know, Brock can sell a match very, very easily.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You're right, it was short and sweet, but I think that was perfect for those two because it had that build-up. It was hard-hitting.
It was all story, and obviously stemming from the Royal Rumble win by Drew McIntyre. Just for me, there's just no thought, no creativity put into those two championship matches whatsoever. Like, all I'll say is these are your heavyweight championship matches. These are your granddaddies of them all. These are, you know, go back in history of the great title matches that they've had before, and this had two disgusting title matches.
I would definitely agree with you, and I think you're seeing this as we've always said it at WrestleMania, but you're seeing this as, if it's a title, it's the final match, it's the main event, it should be the one that match that stands out.
But it's the pinnacle. Being in, you know, in a heavyweight championship match at WrestleMania.
I get that, but could you? If we look at the first one, there was no way at all Goldberg and Braun Strowman was going to the 20-30 minute match when there was no build up.
No, of course. Oh no, of course not. But I question why Goldberg was in it in the first place.
Yeah, I agree. But like, I mean,
that's the issue that I have with it.
I don't know. It's funny, those matches themselves.
He could have strung this out a little bit more. Like, yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, they did it with was it SummerSlam not too long ago when they did. Oh no, it might have been a Survivor Series with Brock Lesnar and Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
And that match that was a decent match. Like, these two can put on a better show than that.
Yeah, I'm not disputing what you're saying. I just think for what it's worth, what that hard hitting and the way Drew got put over pretty quickly, that I like that. The other one was just it was like a filler. It was terrible. But
yeah.
And I don't know what to say about Braun Strowman on that last one. I don't know. Like, he's a big guy.
How many opportunities do they want to give him in a heavyweight championship?
Yeah, and he's finally won it. And just it's a great move that, you know, because he puts so much force into it, that power slam. But he's not going to have long matches. They're just not going to have. He's just not going to have long matches.
It's not going to have it. Well, I mean, he's essentially sort of your new age. Your new age guys like the Big Show and wrestlers like that, where, you know, the great Carly and people like that, where you've got to tailor the match to them because and he looks like he's a fit dude. You know, he's a former power lifter and everything, but he looks like he's a fit guy. You think he should be able to get through a 15-minute match.
Yeah.
You know, they should be able to work a match and work matches. For him, I just find it lazy by WWE Creative that they can't do it.
Well, that was the end. That was the final match of the 2-night pay-per-view, which was called WrestleMania 36. It's interesting. Even the they changed that poster so many times. Just thought I'd bring that up at the end because the people that were on the front kept dropping out. So
well, that's right. Do we want to go into the little extra match that we had after the show had finished?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, that Drew McIntyre come back out and wanted to celebrate a little bit more and started having an interview in the middle of the ring and then was interrupted by the Big Show, which I thought was interesting, and yeah, the Big Show started coming out and sort of giving him a little bit of false praise and everything like that, and then basically just tried to goad him into a title match. I thought this match was better than the original title match against Brock Lesnar. I didn't actually mind that match at all. Those two put on were well worked. What was it, seven odd minutes worth of work. I didn't mind it at all.
Well, they end up wrestling each other again on the night after on Raw too, so for the title. So, I suppose I didn't mind it. It was weird that Big Show come out of nowhere. I think because
it's
got
it's just strange.
TV show, coming out, I believe.
Yeah, and to me, it's a little bit of if we want to sort of go into a little bit of history, it's a little bit of deja vu. In that regard, too, if we sort of want to cast our minds back to WrestleMania 9.
Nine. I knew you were saying that.
Caesar's Palace. And one of the, biggest, not so much underdog champions that's ever sort of walked into WrestleMania, but the main event was Bret the Hitman Hart, who was the current heavyweight champion, versus and just absolute behemoth in Yokozuna. Just holy hell. Like, Google Yokozuna WWE and you will just see an absolute behemoth of a man. But for the size of him, actually moved around fairly well. For a guy who was 600 plus pounds and had the biggest ass on a man I've ever seen in my entire life, he moved quite agilely.
Yeah. Billed as in kilograms for Australia, that's 267 kilos. So that's just how to look at it then. So that is sounds oh, just hearing man. That when you know what I mean, obviously kilograms in Australia, that is
holy mackerel, that's just out of control. So anyway, the Hitman comes into the match as the champion. He yeah, cut a long story short, he has Yokozuna in, you know, with, you know, the fattest legs in history. He actually had him in the sharpshooter, you know, obviously just about ready to tap. And Mr. Fuji throws some ceremonial salt in the eyes of the hitman, and Yokozuna ends up getting the W. And, yeah, then proceeds to be followed out to the ring by one Hulk Hogan, who essentially, once again, goads Yokozuna into a match for the championship. And, you know, in true Hulk Hogan fashion, you know, sort of gets the W at the big, you know, the big boot to the face and the leg drop and wins himself I think it was at the time, I think it was his fifth WWF champion, fifth WWF championship. But that's, I mean, it's nothing new to somebody, for somebody to come out of championship match.
Well, I mean, that wouldn't say new. That's been, I suppose in the general, yeah, someone has come out. Yeah, that's good point.
Walk in and go, hey, give me a match.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Yeah. Oh, look, it was weird where it was placed. Like I thought maybe, you know, build up and then for Raw or something, but,
yeah, that's right.
Say, I can't say that. I can't say it was better than Brock Lesnar, Drew McIntyre. I can't, but see where you're coming.
I'm 100% saying that.
Okay, I can see where you're coming from. I just can't say it. But as a overall, to finish it up, as an overall pay per view, what do you think?
Look, unfortunately, it's in a class of its own. Like you can't. Yeah.
Yeah,
you can't compare it to anything.
That's a good way of putting it. It's in a class of its own because there's nothing that's been like this before. That's a really good way of putting
it. That's right. It's not, not as any class of its own of good or bad or indifferent or anything like that. Just in a class of its own, just because of the situation that that we're all in at the moment, and you know, wrestling is a very strange entity with no crowd. Because you know they're a hell of a lot of the makeup that makes, you know, wrestling what it is the crowd interaction, you know, the crowd noise and everything like that makes wrestling what it is, you know, and as time goes on, I think it'll eventually take its toll on some of the wrestlers not having that sort of, you know, that instant adulation of getting a win or anything like that. You know, from the crowd, or you know, having to work over a crowd, them having to work to cameras now more than they ever have. Instead of heels now can't just do the same old stuff and come out and say that, you know, the town that they're in sucks, and you know that their football team is crap and things like that, because they're not going to get the reaction out of the crowd. So you know, once again, WWE creative are going to have their work cut out for them to try and get through, you know, this pandemic and to keep wrestling sort of, you know, relevant and fun.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's just, that's, at least it's there. That's, I mean, at least we've got something to
watch.
No, that's
right.
That's pretty
and
much
the thing out of all of this, and what I take out of all of this, I feel sorry for the city of Tampa.
Yeah, yep.
I really do. Like, they didn't get that influx of people to come. You know, obviously, WrestleMania brings with it, you know, the masses of fans.
Yep.
And you know, and they didn't get the opportunity to sort of to show, you know, their city off to people, unfortunately. And they've already got next year's WrestleMania up. It's going to be in LA and going to be at the new SoFi Stadium, which who the hell knows if it's even going to be finished construction by then, where the Rams Chargers are going to be playing. So for the NFL upcoming NFL season. So it's I get it. It's 12 months away, but that'll be extremely interesting to see if it gets revisited back to Tampa in the very near future.
I think it will. I think they'll have to, but unfortunately, like you said, LA.
I think they're obliged to. I think.
Yeah, I think so. They're gonna have to. I mean, it's just. It's I guess it's not as unfair, but it is, I suppose, at the end of the day, it was unfair to them.
Well, the WrestleMania bidding process happens every year, so you know it just sucks that they're the ones that won the bid for the year, and then you know this sort of unprecedented time comes through, and they, yeah, and they don't, yeah, they don't get to sort of, you know, showcase everything. So, which is, yeah, it's, I mean, it's unlucky. I'd say it's unfair. It's unlucky.
It is unlucky, but yeah, this no one saw this coming, obviously. So what can you do?
Oh, well, apparently Wimbledon's seen this coming. I don't know if you've seen the little stories that are getting out and about at the moment. For the last 17 years, Wimbledon, the tennis major, has had a $2 million policy against pandemics.
Wow. I'm just looking at it now.
In 17 years, they've had to pay $34 million. They got a payout of $140 million because they cancelled the event because they had the insurance for a pandemic.
Wow.
So how about that?
That's yeah, wow. That's
I only found that out last night.
Did to receive
last
massive
night? Not poor.
Yeah.
Not poor.
Taking
sorry,
out
not
pandemic
poor.
Insurance. That's yeah, wow. That's
wow. Ahead of the curve.
Yeah. Who thinks of that?
They could have saved themselves a few million dollars by, you know, taking it out maybe last year or the year before. But
well, this is true. But
that would have been a bit fishy.
what? Maybe they started it. Maybe they were sick of paying it. Maybe they, oh, no, we're not going to go there. well, that'll do it for us on the our wrestling Final Play podcast. Don't forget you can follow us now on there's so much you can follow us now.
We are everywhere.
You can follow us on Twitter at the Final Play Pod.
Everywhere.
We are on Facebook at Final Play Podcast, but you can get your podcast now on Podbean, on Spotify now, and on Apple. And as well, and SoundCloud as well. We'll have to put it on there in case people still use SoundCloud.
Yeah, well.
But
obviously,
yeah, so
obviously on Twitter as well at Final Play Pod. So yeah. you can actually listen directly off Twitter. So if you don't have a SoundCloud account, you can listen directly off Twitter. But yeah, Podbean, Spotify, Apple Music, we are going to be everywhere. All of our stuff will be available on those platforms. You can also listen to us directly off the Gimco site as well, GIMKO.
Oh, on everything.
So yeah, you can listen to us directly off their website as well. So yeah, get to looking on that as well. But yeah, that's, I mean, we're on all sorts everything. Of platforms nowadays. So
wait
to get back from podcast one, where you at?
Yeah, they probably got no one. There's a computer sitting right there. No one's in the office at the moment. There's one computer that's got 1,000 emails. No,
it's like everywhere.
Have a good week, everyone. My name's Jason.
My name's Miles. Let's keep the content flowing. Enjoy your week, and we'll get through this. No sport thing together. Maybe we'll hear some more wrestling talk, and maybe even some other stuff.
Peace.
See ya.